Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
So Joel, in 2 weeks, Sting and Darby Allin get a shot at the AEW Tag Team titles. They have an impressive record. And in 2 weeks in Phoenix, what are the odds that Sting and Darby win those tag team titles from Ricky Starks and Big Bill to set up the Young Bucks, Nicholas and Matthew, challenging them at the pay-per-view next month in 6 weeks?
Yeah, still a little bit further down the road than you'd like to think, but you know, they still got another 5 weeks to build up to the pay-per-view and this last match between with Sting and Darby Allin. You know, this was a little bit different direction than I thought they were initially going to take. That I thought that there was a chance that the Young Bucks would, now that they've really exercised their EVP roles, they've kind of renewed themselves and realized that they have some power with that. I thought that they would put themselves into a championship match and then raise the stakes at Revolution. But instead, you know, we get another match along the way here on the farewell tour for Sting. So I think it's very likely that they win those championships. But then that puts Revolution a little bit into question there. You know, do they retire with the championships, or do they give that to the Young Bucks, who are really starting to heat up again? And that really kind of changes the dynamic of what I thought initially they'd do, which is, you know, give Sting and Darby the final last win to win the championship and do the celebration to send the crowd home happy. And now it seems like, you know, that he's definitely going to, or that's possible that he's going to go out on a loss, giving up those championships to the Young Bucks.
I think there's a better chance that Sting and Darby win the tag titles and Sting retires as champions, as a tag champion. And then they have a tournament or a battle between the number one contenders, or the Bucks abuse their EVP power as part of their heel characters to just say, well, we got the last title shot, so we're going to just be champions. First wrestling match I saw, Vern Gagne's retirement match against Nick Bockwinkel. Vern won, and then he retired with the title. I could definitely see that being the approach that they take here, to give a happy moment to Sting and Darby and the Bucks, since they're heels and not portrayed as, you know, indestructible, just exciting and talented, but not unable to absorb a loss. I think Sting and Darby win on a happy note, perhaps to close out the show.
Yeah, I mean, they have not lost a match. I don't think Sting has lost a match with Darby throughout his entire run here. So to go completely undefeated for his AEW run makes a lot of sense, to send the crowd home happy again, do that whole celebration, and then you can do a tournament, or the Young Bucks again position themselves to go after that championship. So I think this just gives it, you know, a little bit more something, instead of just you know, the whole giveaway that they're going to win the championship on their way out. So it gives it a little bit more doubt in it. But I agree with you, Wade, that I think that that's a very strong possibility, since that's the way they've been booked their entire run in the promotion.
I was underwhelmed by Sting's promo. Sting's capable of more, and he, you know, he's done long promos, and sometimes they're good and very good. Sometimes, you know, there's ups and downs in them. But I mean, he's down to a month and change of TV appearances, and Darby, not known as a talker most of his AEW run, now has turned into a good promo. But to have Sting just say, you know, I'm all in, I mean, does this really mean something to you to get this tag title shot? Darby just made a case for it. I wanted to hear more from him. I don't mean a lot more. This doesn't have to be, you know, overstaying his welcome with some really long-winded promo. But that, to me, felt kind of, I mean, the crowd was happy he said yes, but I mean, of course he's going to say yes. But let's hear what it would mean to, after this story that Darby told, what does it mean to Sting if he goes out as a tag team champion? I want to hear from him on this. I was disappointed he didn't put more into that.
Yeah, I mean, all he said was that he was all in. They kind of did a wide shot so you could see the all-in promotion for the London show later in the year, and then he gave a yell. And after Darby just gave this really kind of heartfelt talking about how he started by watching Sting's career end early from a neck injury, and then how he came back to AEW and flew to Sting's house in Texas and wrestled with him in the ring that he had and told him that you still got it, prompting the chant. You know, and then just giving the just emotional buildup to wanting to get those tag team championships after the whole run that they've had together in AEW and how much that's meant to Darby Allin, that you'd like to see a lot more from Sting, you know, reciprocate some of that emotion back to Darby.
Yeah.
And, you know, at least at this point in time, we didn't get that. And it's just been a little disappointing that I think that through Sting's farewell tour that you'd like to see a lot more emotion from him, reflecting more on his career. He doesn't need to do a big speech every night, but certainly you're hearing it from other people. And you'd like to get the feeling that Sting is just as invested in this as much as Darby and not just along for the ride.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I've been honest in my thoughts on Sting over the decades, and I've praised him when I think he's deserved it, but there's just so many times where it sort of felt like he's not putting as much in to some of his promos as the real top-level people do. And it's not a strength of his, but I always just encourage people to, you know, in wrestling, when you're making big money and you're setting an example, to put more into it. And this, I mean, there's just not that many big moments left for him to react. And yeah, this just felt flat to me. And I think to the crowd too. I think they wanted to hear more from him. But I am glad that they're hyping a match 2 weeks ahead of time with Sting on his road to retirement and getting more out of it. I think that it's a cool moment for Starks and Bill to be in the match with this kind of historical significance. It might be the last time Sting enters to challenge for a title in his career, win or lose. So I'm glad that they're getting a big TV show main event out of Sting's final journey to the retirement match. And so, yeah. How about the Young Bucks? We've now gotten a few examples of them in this new role. How's it working for you, Joel, at this point, seeing them take on these characters, lean into the EVP title, and they cut away to them kind of shaking their heads at Darby as he was talking about the tag title shot?
I mean, there's pieces of it that I find amusing, you know, with some of the things that they've said, you know, the banger alert as they're just reviewing the rundown sheet, playing into, you know, a lot of where people ask, you know, what do they actually do in the EVP role? And so I find it comical, you know, that they're finally bringing this as a part of their characters into their on-air role. And, what does that actually mean for them? So they're showing up late, you know, and just going through the rundown sheet. Then Alex Marvez, you know, asked them, but what's their first plan of action as executives? even though they have been for the past years of existence since AEW started as a company. So, I mean, there's fun things with that I'm enjoying. But, you know, I want to see more from the Young Bucks on this. They've really struggled to find, you know, who they are as characters. And this is something, but you know, I'm still not buying it as like a genuine thing. It's more just kind of another feels like another kind of being the elite shtick, where I would really like for them to find something that feels very genuine to who they are and yeah. Less of you know, less of something that's trying to be like almost a comedy act.
Yeah, there's a part of me, and I don't know if it's their attempt or not, like a conscious attempt, or perhaps it's the only way they know. But it feels like it potentially is a way of them mocking the whole notion of adding a definable character to who they are on television. Like, it almost feels like a parody of what people have been wanting them to do, which is come up with something that isn't stuck in the early years of their career when they were, you know, do people say teeny bopper anymore? The teeny bopper tag team with the tassels. Mm. And so it's like, oh, you want us to change? Okay, then. And now we're going to become, you know, kind of a like an over-the-top, silly mustache twirling, colorful suit wearing, arrogant EVP type characters that are kind of over the top. So I think, you know, it's not a case of, oh, see, now you get what you asked for. You wanted them to invest some time into developing their character and having a role on TV that isn't just, you know, sort of half-heartedly hyping matches and then giving it their all with match of the year tag team candidates a handful of times a year. You wanted more than that? All right, here's what you have. Well, I don't know. I mean, again, it's not like I'm really down on it, and I'm like, I'm still taking a wait-and-see attitude, but I'm acknowledging as I watch them in this role, there's part of me that is curious, is this a genuine attempt and they're excited about it, or is this, all right, you want us to be characters, we're going to give you some cartoonish heel characters. So that, again, I think I want to wait and see on that. And what matters, their intention matters to a degree, but what matters most is, does it work on television? And so does this get heel heat? Do people tune in to see them abuse their power? You know, is this something that ultimately works at getting crowd heat? Because having people invested in seeing you win or lose, and delighting in seeing heels lose and celebrating a win is a pretty essential part of the way AEW has chosen to present their product. I mean, you could do a very straightforward UWFI sports-like presentation or a Pancrase, a variation of pro wrestling. That's not what AEW does. So the goal is to get people to care about if you win or lose. And if people care about them losing, that's a step forward, even if it's imperfect or not everybody likes it. And that is an added layer to the fact that they have really good matches. But they've been spending years just leaning on having really good matches. And then, like you mentioned, the Being the Elite kind of universe that they existed in, they seem to play to the people who had watched those videos. My other critique, and I'm curious for your take on it, is just leaning into the whole EVP thing. I would have steered them away from that personally. I have been consistent in saying I don't think the fact that Cody, Kenny, and the Bucks were EVPs should have ever been mentioned on TV. I don't think active wrestlers in real life being EVPs needs to be said on television. There's no requirement of it. I don't think it serves a purpose to say active wrestlers have executive powers. I mean, it's just in the type of sport that they're presenting. It's like, what if a USC fighter was an EVP of USC? You wouldn't trust that the referees are scared to enforce rules against him. He's an executive. He has power over their job, or if they come back at the next event. Same thing with announcers. They're not going to be honest about it. So I just don't think it serves an actual kind of on-air storyline purpose in a way that doesn't come with complications that undoes any positives. So I just sort of groaned at the very beginning that was going to be a core part of this presentation. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, you start when you bring in the EVP part of it. I mean, then it starts to call everything into question, because the can't they book their own matches, which I've suggested. Why wouldn't they just book their own match against for the tag team championship? And why wouldn't they just book a lumberjack match to have everybody who they want around the ring to help them win it, you know, or just remove the championship from Starks and Big Bill altogether and give it to them? You know, that it starts opening up all these other possibilities of things that you really just don't want your audience going down. And I think that they're enamored with the, you know, with them watching on monitors backstage and wearing the headsets and wearing the really old school style headset and just kind of the comedy things that come from it, that they run into a lot of the same issues that I have with Toni Storm's gimmick, that a lot of things are amusing about it. You can be very entertained by it, but does it get you invested in wanting to see the matches? And like you said, are you invested then in the outcomes and wanting to follow the story, or are you just, you know, amused by the different, you know, the different backstage gimmicks and things that they say and, you know, ridiculous one-liners that, you know, you'll find on Twitter later. So there's you know, there's a number of issues with that type of stuff, but that seems to really just kind of be a part of the Young Bucks DNA. Whether people enjoy that or not, that's kind of what got them to this point of being the elite. Some of the same criticisms with Kenny Omega, you know, that they're all kind of part of that meta universe of things. But yeah, the EVP part of it, I mean, it's just going to provide them to be able to do a lot more backstage segments and a lot more funny things, but I don't know how much that really advances the Young Bucks as characters that people are interested in their match outcomes.
And then the idea that they're talking about morale being great backstage, and we want to make sure the shows run smoothly. They're trying to play off of what happened with CM Punk. I mean, it's a wrestler morale is a thing that has been an issue for a long time. I mean, Jim Ross in his Ross report on WWE.com used to always write about, oh, you know, when he was referring to our reports often about, you know, morale being down. He's like, oh, all these reports of wrestlers and morale being down, just suck it up and get out there and do your job. So it's not just the Bucks who talk about morale, but as active on-air wrestlers who are likely aspiring to become tag team champions, also talking about trying to create good morale, but doing so in sort of a way that just mocks the notion of it, brings me to this question. Tony Khan, he's the on-air authority figure. You know, the way it's portrayed, if you, you know, connect dots and the way that that AEW is presented, he should have say-so over how the Bucks act. And the Bucks are messing around with poor Dante and Darius Martin. They've been at the building. The Bucks accused them of being late, not having credentials, and like, you hired us. And then the Bucks had just arrived at the building, and so the heat on them is, why are you giving others a hard time for being late when they weren't even late? When you're late, okay, I get the joke. And the idea is heat on them for being hypocrites. And, you know, a lot of people at their jobs feel their bosses are hypocrites. So there's some heel heat in that, but I want it to make sense within the structure. Why is Tony Khan, if they abuse their power and Tony Khan doesn't stop it, why not? I want that to be covered. I hope they've thought that through if this is going to be their gimmick. If they can abuse their power, make matches, threaten to fire people, Tony Khan clearly is portrayed as the ultimate authority figure, and it makes no sense that he won't step in and just stop it. So I want it to make sense. I hope that they've thought that aspect of it through if they're going with this angle, and I want zero references. And I know it's very off-brand for them, and I know some people will push back, but I don't want references to inside clubhouse jokes from Being the Elite or things that have been discussed exclusively on social media or references to backstage stuff that fans are aware of if it doesn't work toward what you're doing now. And of course, again, when I say it might be in the Bucks' DNA to do that, maybe there's no stopping it. That just might be the culture that they come from and all that. But it doesn't mean I'm going to just not criticize it. I don't think that serves. I don't think it serves the fans to have references to things that the fans that a lot of viewers don't know what they're talking about, or they do, but it doesn't serve the purpose of promoting matches and the storyline. It just, in some way, sort of puts heat on them, I guess. But, you know, as heels, but at the expense of a lot of fans not knowing what they're talking about. Any pushback on that, Joel, or anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just not very optimistic that it is going to be well thought through and not have the insider meta references, because that has just been, you know, historically throughout all of AEW, is that Tony lets people, you know, really kind of find their own character and, you know, lets them, especially the Young Bucks, are going to be able to have a lot of creative control as to what they want to do. And we've seen many times where they make these meta references, especially a lot of things to CM Punk, because they can't talk very openly about it. So there's a lot of innuendo with that. And I imagine that this is just going to be a continuation of a lot more of that.
All right. So let's pause. Let's formally introduce the show, and then we'll get to phone calls. I'd love to hear other callers. I know we've got at least one email on the Bucks. Love to hear your take on Sting and Darby, the Young Bucks, Ricky Starks and Big Bill, and this storyline leading into Revolution, Sting's retirement, the Bucks' new characters. If you have a completely different opinion, we want to hear it genuinely. If you agree with us or want to add something to it, chime in on that too. But of course, we welcome your calls on any subject, and we'll detail how to call us in just a moment. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, January 24th, 2024. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, which features my live TV coverage of Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision, along with major pay-per-views and PLEs, such as the Royal Rumble this Saturday night. Hope you're checking it out daily. We have other news updates, ratings reports, editorials, flashbacks, special features, much more, stuff you won't find on every other website where you just kind of get the clickbait SEO targeting stories that may or may not have substance. We, you know, stay away from that and just try to give you some substance and reliable news and then just timely live coverage of TV shows. So I encourage all of you listening to open up a tab, create a bookmark, and check out what we're writing about every day at pwtorch.com. The other voice you hear on the show is Joel Dinell, a PW Torch contributor. Joel, it is always great having you on the AEW Post Show.
Great to be back here with you, Wade.
Excellent. Talk about the what you're involved in and the Torch besides co-hosting these shows lately.
Yeah. So the other thing where you can hear me more regularly is that every Friday morning, Greg Kanner and I host the All Elite Conversation Club, where, of course, we talk about all things with All Elite Wrestling. We talk about the news. We run down Dynamite. And we've had a very fun banter the last few weeks here as things are ramping up with his job personally, that he works for Fox 2, and that's based out of Detroit. And so we're always getting the update of how things are just getting crazier and crazier in the city as the Detroit Lions are getting closer to a Super Bowl. So I'm rooting for them, even though we're both in the NFC North. So it's just fun to hear what's been going on there. But he's just getting more busy. So I'm thankful he finds time to talk with me about wrestling. But we go really in-depth about AEW. We go really talk about each of the segments, really what we liked about it, what we didn't, and try to see where things are headed and what was the thought process into each of those segments. So if you want to hear some stuff that's more than just kind of a rundown of the show, but really just going in-depth on it, check us out. Then those typically come out on Fridays and Saturdays.
So search PW Torch on your podcast app. That's the best way to go about it. And subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast feed. While you're at it, search Wade Keller and subscribe to the Red Logo Show, which are these, the post shows following Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision, along with some flashback shows throughout the week. And then the Blue Logo Show, which looks the same as the Red Logo, but it's a podcast, not a post show. And that features our weekly flagship, which was a two-parter this week with Rich Fan, talking about the Netflix WWE Raw story, previewing the Royal Rumble, talking about AEW bringing back the rankings, talking about The Rock getting a seat on the TKO board, and much more. Dolph Ziggler, Nick Nemeth, showing up at Impact. Covered a lot of topics yesterday and today in a three-hour total two-part flagship. So when you search Wade Keller, subscribe to the Blue Logo Show. Also, that is free. And if you want, you can get all of our shows on one feed, our VIP exclusive podcasts, along with ad-free and plug-free versions of the free shows like this one on a podcast feed, compatible with Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and most other popular podcast apps. No need to use a password or advanced settings with our setup. When you go VIP, you'll get a link in the email. You click on it, and you are in with the VIP feed. Full details at pwtorch.com/goVIP. You can also, by the way, stream our podcast from our main website, pwtorch.com, and you can find out more information about the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup at pwtorchdailycast.com, the home page for our PW Torch Daily Cast series, which features a different show every day of the week with different hosts and a different topic. You can see the lineup at pwtorchdailycast.com. All right, so we're here to talk Dynamite, and you are invited to join us. You can call into the show and talk with us right now. 347-215-8558 is the number. So if you're live streaming us just past 10:30 Eastern on Wednesday, that means you can call us. So the number again is 347-215-8558. If you want to be on the show, push 1 when you call. That flags you on the switchboard. Otherwise, you can email us if that works better, especially if you don't listen to our live stream and you download the show later in the night or the next day, but you still want your opinion to be heard or you have a question for us. That email is wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. Do not let that autofill to wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That has been unreliable in terms of spam filtering and that kind of thing. So we switched to Gmail, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. All right, we've got a bunch of callers on hold, so we will pivot to letting our callers, Joel, lead the conversation, and we will start with James in Clemson. James, welcome. You are up first. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Joel. I was going to talk about Swerve and Hangman and that whole build. So I'm really worried that this is going to be a three-way. And that's what it feels like it's headed towards, and I don't want to see that. And I guess what I'm just wanting you guys to, like, kind of talk through a little bit is what the thought process of it being a three-way, if that's the case, why? First of all, Swerve beat Hangman twice, so I don't understand why Hangman has to be in this match. And when I think about it, I think the thought process may be they might be worried that if it's Swerve versus Joe, it may be a heel matchup. So they threw Hangman in as a face. But I just don't get the psychology of it. So I'm hoping you guys might be able to shed a little light on why we might want a three-way for the pay-per-view.
Yeah, good question. Well stated. Hangman getting a win on TV over, you know, good opposition and staring down Joe, then crossing paths with and interacting with Swerve Strickland is certainly pointing towards a three-way situation. And, yeah, you have Hangman, who may or may not be kind of leaning more heel or maybe just having a baby face with more of a serious edge, which I'm for also. Swerve's still a heel, but obviously fans cheering him and probably, you know, sooner than later, but we'll see, transitioning to a full-fledged baby face with Nana, probably as a Prince Nana, as a bit of a cult figure manager doing the dance, unless he splits with him. And then Joe as, you know, definitely a heel. I mean, that was reinforced with how he treated Hook in the opening segment. And then some of his commentary, in a way, it'll be a pick'em because you've got a heel in Swerve who's going to be cheered. You have a babyface in Hangman who's going to be probably cheered, but maybe booed against Swerve. And then you have Joe solidifying himself as a heel who is almost always cheered. There's always a headwind when they try to portray him as a heel. But he's doing his best to be a heel, but he's also just a, you know, no-nonsense badass. I can see fans wanting to cheer him. So Joel, explain the psychology of it and the strategy of not doing a one-on-one match, if you can get into the head of Tony Khan and his strategy, if this is indeed where this lands. And I think it's safe to say it's a strong possibility.
Yeah, I mean, this is the way that I think it has been headed for a while. I think that it's a very strong possibility that's going to be the three-way match, certainly because they've involved both Swerve and Hangman. Even though Joe was not involved with Swerve's match, he still got into Hangman's face after the commercial break. You know, I think, like you mentioned, Wade, that it brings a lot. It brings the different dynamic where you have Swerve, who people love chanting the "Who's House, Swerve's House," and they like getting behind him. But also, Hangman Page is somebody that that Tony's been wanting to heat up for this year. They put a big emphasis on how the records are resetting for 2024. So forget about what happened, even though Swerve just beat Hangman Page twice in two really good matches last year. That they're trying to say everything is resetting once the rankings come out here, and that Hangman is 3-0 for this year. So they're trying to add that type of sports logic, because you would say, well, Swerve's already beaten Hangman twice. Why is Hangman at all involved into the championship picture? And so you could disagree with the logic there. But I think that they're trying to avoid having another Swerve and Hangman one-on-one match, because it's going to be very difficult to top that that hardcore match that they had at Full Gear, that there's really not much more for them to go in a one-on-one match, you know, unless you want to do the kind of the reverse WWE booking of having the stipulation that going to the regular singles match. But I don't think that's what they're doing in this particular case. So I think it also just leaves a lot more intrigue. You know, is Joe going to continue to hold on to this championship? Yeah, you could also see them trying to run with Swerve, that he's got some momentum here. Could they go back with Hangman because they're heating him up and he's finally found a character that works well for him? You know, I think that they're just kind of looking for a different dynamic where I think that they can play with some different possibilities, even though it's not everybody's favorite to see a three-way match. You know, certainly I prefer the one-on-one, but I think with a show that's being really built around Sting and his retirement match, that I think it just gives them the flexibility to do something different with the title picture.
Yeah. I mean, I think the shortest answer in one sentence, James, is they want Swerve in a title match, but they don't want just a straight up heel match. I think we have to wait to see what they do. I mean, in fairness to them, let's see what they have in mind. There might be an angle that takes place with Hangman or a official turn of Swerve, or maybe an official turn of Joe for that matter, or double turn, you know, where ultimately we look at it and we go, okay, it wasn't a crutch for someone they didn't believe in, or some they didn't want someone to do a clean job. It really was for some larger purpose that set up things really well coming out of the pay-per-view. And so I just say, you know, be patient, but, you know, you don't have to like what they end up doing, but I don't think we have all the answers yet. And there may be one that mitigates some of the negativity that some people rightfully feel about a three-way match. When why have a three-way match? What, I mean, there should be a reason for it. And I don't know storyline-wise if we're quite there yet. Joe should just face top contenders one-on-one. That should be how it works. WWE sort of created a storyline because they built in the story where Roman Reigns didn't want to wrestle, and then you know they turned it into, well, then these three will fight without you. And then Roman's like, I want to be in the match. I mean, like, they had the GM explain it. They built the story. They built up a story with it when the Bloodline interrupted the three-way. It was going to determine who the single contender was. So we'll see if AEW puts thought into it, or they just go, hey, sometimes we arbitrarily make it a three-way. James, back to you.
Yeah. And I think that if I had to, like, make a call, I think it may have something to do with not wanting Swerve to take a pin and maybe have him lose, which if they want Swerve to lose, I would just much rather see them do something brave and, like, have him just get pinned by Joe in a very close match. I think that just would get more people way more invested.
James, that's why when we see the match, I'm trying to be a little optimistic. Maybe it'll make sense afterwards, but it might just turn out to be what you just said. And, you know, sort of shame on them then. I mean, just be brave. Book a match. Sometimes really good wrestlers lose big-time matches. It's not a huge setback, and that can sometimes be a driver for a really good story post-loss. And so hopefully that's not the only reason that they're doing it.
Yeah, completely agree.
I think that's also the fear, too.
Go ahead, Joel.
I think that's also the fear, too, with them bringing back the ranking system, you know, is that they're going to want to protect some of these records now that they're going to be highlighting that a lot more. One of the things that I've been critical of AEW is the protecting and not really having, the solid winner and loser and focusing on that. I think that Tony, with trying to make everybody happy, that there's going to be a lot more of trying to insert somebody else in there for a screwy finish because, the rankings are seemingly going to mean a lot more here pretty soon.
Yeah, go ahead, James.
Yeah, well, speaking of the rankings, this is a bit of a sidebar, but I would like to see the rankings be kind of like college football rankings, where it's not really about your record, it's about who you beat and how you beat them. I would love to see something
quality
like that if they could
opposition.
Figure it out. Yes, exactly. They talk about it in college football all the time. It's about the eye test, you know. Let's do that in wrestling.
I made the case on a recent podcast, James, that there should be a YouTube show where someone hosts it. I suggested Alex Marvez, but it could be Renee Paquette, whoever. Sit down and have a panel of the actual championship committee. You know, and it can be whoever.
Yes.
You know, Jerry Lynn and whoever, non-wrestlers, people who work behind the scenes, and have a discussion about it and say, here's the records. Here's the rankings. How do we feel about it? Why does this person with three losses this year have a higher ranking than someone with zero losses? And then you explain, well, they've taken on better competition, and they didn't win by cheating, or they didn't win through interference. You could have this real substantive, meaty discussion to explain your rankings. And, I mean, that would bring a sports-like feel to things. So, yeah, your college football example is great, and – quality of opposition absolutely should be part of it. That was what started all this, was Hook with his impressive record, but the most credible person he beat was Ethan Page, and it was a big drop-off after that. And he's getting a world title shot. You know, that got criticized, and then, of course, well, Jinder Mahal is worse, the whataboutism that Tony Khan put out there, which led to a bunch of stuff, and now all of a sudden that sparked bringing the rankings back. Joel, your thoughts on what we've seen so far with the rankings?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you guys are bringing a lot of great suggestions to it. I mean, it is more or less just kind of a wait and see when they drop these rankings, and does it correlate with what we've seen on TV, and how do they come to that? Is it just based on people's records, which they have put an emphasis on, talking about how Hangman is 3-0, or is it more focused on the quality of opponents? And I think that you guys are bringing up a lot of good possibilities that would make this a lot more intriguing, a lot more interesting. We know that we've heard reports of WWE wants to go more into add more sports element, and that was certainly what Tony Khan had said after World's End, is that they want to bring more of a sports element to this. So I think that by going down that route of focusing on who you've beaten, you know, is it just by cheating? You know, I think all that can make those finishes mean a lot more if all that is factored in versus just, you know, wins, losses, et cetera.
James, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah. So I wanted to also bring up the main event tonight, the Copeland versus Suzuki I think AEW kind of let those guys and let the fans down with that, with timing issues. And also not much build throughout the show. That could have been a much bigger match. And, you know, you could have cut that triple threat match or that six-man match beforehand or something and really gave that match some time to shine. And I do think AEW kind of let them down with that a little bit.
Because most of you wanted to see it go more than 9 minutes or 10 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, okay. I would have liked to have seen it go maybe closer to 15, like, because just because of the two, who they are and it being a never before seen match, you know. And also just more build for it. And, you know, I think they could have adjusted some timing for that.
Yeah, I think that's fair criticism, Joel. We've been talking about it for 4+ years. You know, sometimes there's a main event and Tony Khan thinks it speaks for itself. People, it's a dream match in the bubble that Tony Khan largely lives in on social media. It's a super intriguing match. Copeland, all those years in WWE, never faced anyone with this style of Suzuki. People are going to tune in. It's going to be novel, and people are going to chant, holy shit at the beginning and be all into it. Well, true. That's, you know, there are 2,000 people, give or take, in the building tonight. Not a big crowd. Some of them were very excited when those two stood in the ring. But there's a lot of people who aren't going to AEW shows and a lot of people who are watching Dynamite and don't know the backstory, even though Suzuki's been around for a handful of matches, who would like a little context, a little more context. Have Adam Copeland sitting down in the locker room, taping his wrists, tying his boots, talking to a roving reporter about how this is different than what he's used to in WWE. He's used to tables and chairs being the weapon. Or traditional wrestling moves, and Suzuki's going to come in there and drive his elbow into the side of his head, and he's got to absorb it and fire. I mean, I'm sitting here trying, you know, like, it's not hard to come up with a promo for Copeland, just as it isn't hard to come up with something gracious for Sting to say beyond I'm all in. And we didn't get it. And again, it's philosophical. Tony, you know, hasn't done that. He hasn't seen it as a premier a thing to do every week for his main events. It's on occasion showed up. Usually it's not a priority. And for a match like this, especially, I think you can, it doesn't have to come across as patronizing viewers who know and are already excited. You can get them more excited. I watch a lot of sporting events and the pre-show gets me more excited. I like hearing the announcers talk about what's at stake and why it matters and say things I already know, but sometimes they add something I don't know. And sometimes their excitement is contagious. So I don't think it's insulting to fans, Joel, to talk about a match just because a lot of fans on social media already know everything about it. I'm with James on this, Joel. Anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think that there's a very tasteful way that you can continue to promote the main events throughout the show, you know, without going total overboard with everything of having constant videos or the announcers talking about after every segment. But certainly you can go to a shot of them talking about the importance of this, seeing two very different styles. Like you mentioned that this is very much a novelty match, something that I don't think Adam Copeland's faced anybody like this. You know, he mentioned after the match that he was hit harder than he ever has in his life, which I don't necessarily doubt that. I mean, man, his face was really purple at one point where I was almost concerned.
I thought Copeland was knocked out after the first elbow.
Yeah. So there was a lot to that, but I think that you could have built some of that up to talk about that, to say that Adam Copeland has never faced somebody of this level who's going to hit him harder than he's ever been hit before. You can say those types of things because we as fans who know Suzuki, we know that. We know about his forearms. We know about his submissions. And how is Adam Copeland going to escape this, you know, other than just, hey, here's a novelty match that's a part of the Cope Open, whatever it is.
Cope Open.
Yes. You know, that there was a lot more to that. And then, you know, Copeland just gets the win and then just calls out Christian again. That I think there was more that they could have gotten out of that. But certainly, yeah, they had some timing issues. They had already booked the overrun that they were going to go commercial free for it. But this goes for all their main events that I think that you want to give that sense of importance to stick with the show and that the main event is the biggest thing. And sometimes, like in this case, it just kind of feels like, all right, well, we still got to get this in here. We still got to fit it in with the show. And you'd like to see them put more emphasis on it.
Taz could have just said, or Shivani could have just said, hey, I know we're supposed to think about this match, but Do you guys realize Minoru Suzuki's warming up backstage for his match with Copeland, and Copeland's sitting here for 2 hours trying to think about what he's in store for? Like, little comments here and there about just having the announcers express excitement over a match that's novel and a little bit outside the normal realm to kind of be a thought leader and influencer. I'm trying to think of like what term applies in today's lexicon, where the announcer is taking a casual fan and the casual fan vicariously is getting excited because they are. And you can't do it every week for every match. But if you're trying to get over this match and it doesn't have that sort of built-in storyline in terms of a personal feud that the weekly viewers are familiar with, there are creative ways to go about building up that excitement. And I do believe people stay tuned longer if they're more excited about the main event and looking forward to it, as opposed to, you know, what we see with Raw every week. There is a tendency, especially in a three-hour show, for viewership to drop over time. And I think you can stem that. You can fight that with proper use of the time you have leading up to the main event. James, anything else quick? I want to not leave our other callers on hold too much longer here.
Yeah, of course. I just wanted to finish off with some quick praise for AEW. It is a little over a month before the pay-per-view, and it's starting to take shape, and that's not something we've been able to say about very many pay-per-views in AEW.
Mm-hmm.
Good point. I enjoy it. It's been a criticism, and I think deservedly so. Sometimes a match should be announced the week of the pay-per-view because you're telling a story, in the way to kind of have a crescendo for the hype is to have it come together at the last second. But you can't have two-thirds of the card come together at the last second. All right. I think there's a downside to it. So, yeah, I mean, the step in the right direction, Joel.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I've been calling for, is that that was one of the things I enjoy about AEW, is speculating what are the big matches that they're putting together. The one thing is that we still have another 5 weeks to go, and so you don't want things to peak too early. You want to make sure that everything is really kind of coming together at the right time for that March 3rd.
All right, James, appreciate the call. Good topics.
Yeah, have a great night.
Yep, you too. Our number is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. That'll flag you on the switchboard and let us know that you want to be on the show. We'll go to Valentino in Miami next. Valentino, welcome. What's in your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, Wade. Thank you so much. I started off, like everyone else, watching the Samoa Joe and Hook segment, and I couldn't help but just be a little frustrated because, you know, it's such a big news week for WWE and the Netflix deal. I just thought that AEW would want to bring it. And I didn't feel that it was brought. I'm also not the biggest Samoa Joe is champion fan. I like him. I appreciate him. I just don't think he's the guy. I think there would be so much more buzz around anybody else's champion. So happy to see anyone take it off of his waist. But also was really, really, really just annoyed at how just weird Hook was holding that microphone. And I guess it's part of his character. But I guess after seeing last week, you know, him struggle to beat Samoa Joe, and it was a good match. It was a good showing. I just felt like we would get some new depth to his character, and we didn't get it. We got nothing. And Samoa Joe even gave his promo was pretty much a repeat of last week, and I feel like, you know, barely anything moved forward.
So I'm a fan of Samoa Joe's champion, obviously to each their own. Elaborate
sure,
a little
more
on why you're not. And then I'll talk about Hook, because I thought there was some awkwardness that promo that's worth mentioning.
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. I just think he had his chance a few months ago when he first faced MJF, and I didn't really see a reason why to repeat that rematch, and just for him to kind of get the championship run. I think anybody else. I think there's so many other people who could have just brought a lot more kind of spotlight to it. I think Samoa Joe's a team player, and I think he's a locker room leader, and I think maybe, you know, Tony Khan might have said, hey, you know, this is what we need right now, and you're the guy, but I just don't feel it. That's pretty much my take on it, roughly.
Joel, how are you feeling about Joe?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Joe plays his role really well as the heel champion. I mean, obviously, it's something that's deserved behind the scenes for a role that Joe has played, and then also to get through a lot of the MJF stuff where things kind of went sideways with Adam Cole, that Joe was somebody reliable that Tony could go to. It's really – how long is Samoa Joe going to be champion? And I don't think anybody has a really good sense of that because people, right. There's one way you could say that he seems like he's a transitional champion that you could go to somebody else because he's not the biggest star that they have on the roster. He's not someone who's young that they want to get all invested into. But I think that he is somebody who can certainly put over somebody who's younger when they choose to do that point to elevate somebody to that type of level. But I agree that there was some awkwardness here, but really, I mean, the thing that did it in for me was that the crowd was so small and at times they were so quiet that they just lacked a lot of heat to where throughout the whole show that there was points where things just felt like they were happening in slow motion because you just didn't have that same ambiance that you do in other times. And this definitely stood out to me, especially with Hook being a man of few words and, a little bit of awkwardness to his delivery, that it just felt like things were happening, several times slower than they normally would. So it came off a little bit differently in reality than I think they imagined as the concept.
Yeah, I think Hook has been effective as the man of few words until tonight. I don't know what was wrong. I think the facial expressions, as much as we could see of his face, which was mostly nose from the nose down, the chin was kind of jutting out in a way that I don't know if he was nervous or going for something that didn't really work or what. It was his weakest moment on the mic so far. It felt kind of put on and forced. But I like the angle. I mean, I like Hook coming out and saying, "You beat me," fair and square, but leaning in and going, "We'll cross paths again." And then Joe having a chance to take this challenger who gave him a real tough fight, much more than people expected, and just call for security to get that this unworthy out of his ring. If the goal is for Joe to be booed and be a bad guy, you got to do stuff like that. I will say as a caveat, because I want to be consistent, I think it's absolutely stupid and ridiculous that security doing their one, taking orders from a wrestler to do something that doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then two, that they get beat up and the announcers don't talk about the fact that security were in there not to get beat up, but because they were hired by Tony Khan to keep order. And if Tony Khan has given Samoa Joe whatever permission he apparently has to order security to get wrestlers out of the ring, then attacking the security guys with two suplexes and a red rum should be something that gets talked about afterwards. And I know most people don't care at all about security. And I might be the only person in the world who cares when security guys get beat up as shtick, but I think it's tired and it doesn't make any sense. And I think it's just sort of a hack thing to do that people do too often. Let's have security get in the ring and then just get tossed around. They're doing their job. They shouldn't get beat up. And if they are, that should be a bigger deal than AEW made of it. I am conceding in my point. I might be the only one in the universe who cares about that, but I will still make that point here that I think it's dumb. I think it's dumb that security took orders, and I think it's dumb that Hook beat him up, and the announcers just acted like this is just another day at work for everybody. Valentino, back to you.
Yeah, thanks for that, Wade. I just felt like it was I don't know if it was just lazy is the right word, but I just felt a lack of creativity in that opening segment, and it hurt, and it made me miss MJF, and I mean, even I was getting a little bit, tired of him, and I thought it was getting repetitive as well, but still, I felt like they could have done so much more with Hook, and I just, correct me if I'm wrong, but I just felt, didn't Joe beat him up after the match as well? I felt like that would have called for, like, him to not come in there and want to shake his hand, but, like, come in there and try to beat him up. Like, I think just maybe that and then Samoa Joe like fleeing like a, like a cowardly champion or anything, to protect him, still make him look strong. But I just don't think anybody really came out of that angle. I don't even know if they knew what they wanted us to gain from that angle. And outside of what we already gained last week, it felt a little weak to me, but that's all. I don't want to be so negative about it.
Well, I'll say one thing. Last week, Hook did yell at Joe as Joe was leaving. Is that all you got? And then that's when Joe came back and went after him. So I think it's not like, oh, Hook got beat up. Why would he go in there and show respect? Hook kind of almost literally asked for it last week. You know, it was his way of trying to, you know, show he lost, but he's up for more of a fight. It's Tommy Dreamer, do you have another? So I don't have a problem with that aspect of it. And I think there was a purpose. I mean, the purpose was Hook being gracious and Joe not being gracious. And they're trying to get heel heat on Joe, who fans want to cheer, and get Hook over as a tough guy. By the way, my solution for – or a solution for my issue with a security thing is if three security guys get in the ring and Hook is like, all right, you know, put the hands up, I'm going to leave. And then one guy just gets kind of in Hook's face and just goes – go quicker, get out, like because Hook's not going fast enough. And then he puts his hand on Hook and starts kind of acting like a big shot to Hook, like, I'm a security guy, you need to listen to me better, and puts his hand on Hook, spins him around and says, you need to pay attention to us. Something like that, where the security guy's a jerk. Two other security guys go, hey, back off. Like, that's not what we're supposed to do.
Give it that nuance.
Yeah, then Hook goes and gives the guy a T-bone and a red rum, and the other security guys leave the ring going, we warned the guy. We warned our colleague he shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
You put a little more thought into this stuff and just sort of cover those bases. And it's just, you know, I mean, I just – a little extra thought, a little extra layer of effort.
I agree with that. I do think even that little tweak of it, I mean, I was excited just listening to that, truthfully. I mean, I think – It felt predictable, and it did feel just like the lack of creativity. Was there anything on the show tonight that you did notice that you feel that, you know, they stepped it up with, just to kind of, you know, not retaliate, but just to kind of like, you know, give some sort of hope to the AEW faithfuls that, you know, they're still in the fight? Oh, I think I'm cut off.
Joel, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Wade.
Joel, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yep. Could be my Wi-Fi here. Something. Good. I'm going to try to. I am back. Sorry about that. My mesh went down, so I'm on a little bit weaker signal here, but hopefully it holds up. Valentino, anything else you want to add? I didn't hear if you responded last time.
Oh, okay. I mean, I just said that I agree with your point. I think that would have made the segment a lot, just a little bit more exciting and just enough exciting. And then the other thing that I said is, did you see anything on tonight's show that kind of made you feel that, you know, it was AEW was kind of like telling the crowd, the AEW faithfuls, hey, like, we're still in the fight. You know, we're going to give you a really, really good, you know, we're not giving up. We're going to, you know, we have some good stuff for you. Just hang tight, you know, because I just want to know how you felt. If you saw anything like that made you look forward to coming weeks.
Yeah, you brought up in your initial question, and I did need to respond to it. And, I was kind of, you know, preparing my thoughts for the post-show. I was like, what's not like a blockbuster show? Now, not every week can be. But I was trying to think, you know, what are the major anchor segment developments on the show? And, you know, I had Hook and Joe and the angle and then Swerve and Hangman, and that's the world title centric. And then, you know, the Sting segment, which we did lead with. And then Minoru Suzuki and Copeland with the open challenge. But, yeah, I mean, it didn't come across as a show where any kind of special extra effort was put into it. It just felt like Tony Khan, completely separate from WWE, just putting on the show he's going to put on. And I'm fine with that. I don't think that in the big picture – coming out after the Netflix announcement with Raw, that Dynamite has to do something extra outside of the normal rhythm and cadence of what Tony thought was prudent booking as of last week. Joel, what do you think about the show, and what do you think of Valentino pointing out maybe it had been a good week to show off a little bit?
Yeah, I don't think that the best strategy for Tony is to always respond to things with WWE. I mean, as we've seen with stuff on social media and then also with your show, is that you need to stay on the course of where he's headed with things. And this is, you know, this is week six heading in. You know, we're 6 weeks away from the pay-per-view, so we still have another five shows. And so it definitely what shows to me is that if we could have some more special dynamites to break things up, other things to build up to, and we did get a little bit of that on the show where they did announce that tag title match for Sting and Darby Allin. So we had another kind of big thing to look forward to there. But otherwise, you know, I mean, it's just kind of your normal Dynamite show where they are not going to have all the stars on it because they're trying to spread people out onto Collision. But they're still trying to give you, you know, unique and novel matchups. Like you saw Jeff Hardy and Swerve Strickland on here. And then you also saw Minoru Suzuki and Adam Copeland. So they're still trying to give you a variety of, give you some good matches like they opened with, and give you those novelty matches, but nothing huge or huge story development on this show. And I don't think it necessarily was the spot to do it. You know, one of the big stories going into the show was this is a much smaller venue. I know that WrestleTix last announcement on tickets out there was just over 2,100. You know, for this building, and definitely it came off that way. It was a darker building, some spots where the crowd was just completely silent at times where you could hear a pin drop. And other times, you know, that there was few things that they popped for. So I don't think that this necessarily would have gotten the reaction if they did something big here. And that was one of my criticisms with that opening segment when you guys were talking about Samoa Joe and Hook, is that I think that had this been a bigger crowd in a bigger arena, this may have come off a lot differently than it did in with so few people.
Kicked in just a second, and I think we're back. So, Valentino, any response to what Joel and I had to say there?
No, that's a really good point. I did not take into account the size of the arena that they were in. But yeah, that does kind of, you know, that does put things into perspective. I still feel wish they would have brought it a little bit harder, even in like some subliminal ways. But other than that, you know, I'm definitely rooting for AEW still, like, just because it's, you know, it's good for the business, it's good for the fans. So, you know, just I'm still gonna watch. I'll be there. I'll be watching next week. But I appreciate both of you. Thanks, Wade. Thanks, Joel.
Thanks, Antonio. Good to hear from you. Call again. Yeah, I mean, I talked about it when Collision started. My biggest concern wasn't that it wasn't going to get them a bigger TV rights deal. My biggest concern wasn't that they would do terrible ratings on Saturday night, because Saturday night is so terrible. You know, such a tough competition in a lot of different ways, especially for their core demo. My concern was they're going to have to run twice as many live shows per year, and they're going to go to cities that they wouldn't go to because they don't have the fan support, and or go to cities too often and burn out the fans. And another side effect, which you alluded to, is people don't know when they buy an AEW ticket who they're going to see anymore. When it was just Dynamite, you're going to see – you didn't know you're going to see everybody, but you knew you'd see everybody who was available that week. And, you know, because sometimes people are on vacation, out with injuries, on hiatus, whatever. But anybody who's in the mix and on television in the previous 2 months, there's a really good chance you're going to see almost all of them on any given Wednesday night. Now, and we've heard from people, I don't know if I want to buy a ticket until I have an idea of who's going to be there, because I don't want to go to a show if John Moxley isn't there. Or I'm going to wait until FTR are in town. Or I really want to know which women wrestlers are going to be wrestling, because you only get one or two, you know, women's matches, usually just one on these shows. And maybe an interview segment with a couple of them. And so by having two shows, you're splitting your – it's, I don't know the stats on this, but most of the big stars do not appear on both Dynamite and Collision. And so you have – what you end up with is the side effect, which I think is hard to measure, but it was tangible tonight. You end up going to cities you wouldn't otherwise go to if all you were doing was Dynamites. And you end up with a small crowd of 2,000 and change, and it felt like a small-time show. Because sure, you just can't get around it. I mean, I was watching early on the camera angles, you know, and Swerve came out. It's like you can tell everything was positioned very strategically during the pyro in the opening. They focused on the stage. Then they showed that tops of the heads of fans on the floor from behind. Then they showed a close-up of a pocket of fans in the one part of the arena where there was a crowd on the bleachers. And then the camera angle was always pointed in a certain direction, and it was like they had a sore neck and couldn't turn to the right, the camera people. Mm-hmm. Like, they're all pointing to the left. And you feel claustrophobic. You hear individual fans, and it just doesn't feel big time. That's a price you pay when you expand too fast. So we're seeing that come to roost at this point. There is a negative that comes with overextending yourself, and you end up with a low energy, dark environment for Dynamite. And I think back to that first Dynamite in D.C. at Capital One Center, and the energy and the big time vibe and the feel and how bright it was, and just, yeah, the energy there. And when I think of AEW now, and Collision is a part of it too, when I enjoy watching Collision, I do a post show on it. I don't have to do that. I could certainly take Saturday nights off, and I might eventually, depending on how things go. But I enjoy the show enough where I schedule my life around it, watch it live almost every week, and do a post show. But it doesn't change the fact that it doesn't feel big time. It feels dark and minor league, but with good wrestling. You know, and some key storyline developments that for my job I need to at least eventually watch. So it's a bummer. You know, they'd be better off if they. I think they'd be better off if they concentrated on making Dynamite the best weekly show they could have, and thought about an extra 2 hours to sell to a network a little deeper into their existence with a little bit more momentum, and they don't have it.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, ideally, I mean, that's what it would be, is that you just have the one. I mean, that's where AEW is just the most hot, is that it's like you got to tune in to watch Dynamite. That's where all the major happenings are. That's where everything, the major developments are going to happen. And yep. Now it's spread between these two shows. And again, you don't know which talent is going to be on which. I mean, WWE does a decent job that if you go to, their events page and you can see, who are some of the featured wrestlers who are scheduled to appear at the event. And for the most part, that is the main people who are going to be there. But then you go to the AEW's event page, and they still have Kenny Omega on most of the graphics for the coming weeks. And they could do to just update some of these graphics with the people that they actually plan on booking for these shows. But we've heard reports that people until a day or so before, that they don't even know if they're going to be at Dynamite or if they're going to be at Collision that week. They've gotten into a little bit of a pattern where Collision has basically become the Blackpool Comedy Club, FTR, and House of Black show. And then everybody else is kind of, mixed between the other two shows. But I think just, having a little bit more defined as to who's going to be at each event. And then, we've heard different ideas of, should they announce dark matches? Should they announce things that are exclusive for if you attend the show live to get people more interested in being there? And yep. I think those are a lot of things that they should explore, giving people matches that you're only going to see if you're there in person. That's not going to be on television. Again, these shows are so long as is. I do want to add more on there, but then you got to be smarter about, how much are you going to tape of a dark match before the event, and then you can see Dynamite, and then you get Rampage, and then sometimes you get Ring of Honor, that some of these shows just drag on and drag on, that I think just condensing it down and just making it so that AEW, you don't have to follow all this other product to be on top of it, that if you could just tune in to Dynamite and maybe an hour of something else, I think it's going to get people a lot more attached to it, to where sometimes it just feels like a chore when you have to catch up on 5+ hours of television.
Yeah. Well put. All right. Our number 347-215-8558. We are getting near the end of a phone call portion, and we'll move to email. But we will go to Larry in Beardstown, Illinois is up next. Larry, thanks for holding. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight? Larry.
Question first,
Joel,
off, you may have answered it
there
already.
It goes, yeah.
What's that? Oh, hey.
Oh, I couldn't hear it first, but now we can.
Well, have you had some issues with the Blog Talk Radio tonight?
No, just my Wi-Fi.
Oh, okay. Well, I just wanted to make a comment or two and maybe ask a question. You may have already beat me some of what I was going to say about the crowd and the energy levels. I watched the show, seemed just kind of flat to me, and the crowd, it was just, to me, from the crowd to everybody in the ring and backstage, I don't know if you and everyone else necessarily agrees with it, but it just seemed kind of a low energy, flat, just kind of their show.
I think, it's logical. When you are on a live national TV show for a major wrestling company and you come into a building and there's 2,000 people in change, it doesn't help morale. You know, it doesn't help your energy level. And it's just hard to overcome that. It didn't bog down the show for me, like, throughout. I mean, it wasn't like something I was preoccupied with. But I was cognizant of it at the beginning and certainly, you know, noticed during the show, you know, that there were a few fans here and there who you could hear talking and yelling, and it was echoey and it was dark. So, yeah, I mean, it's just – I mean, I'd be circling back to repeat everything, but it's a side effect of things and of – expanding too quickly. And the thing I hadn't brought up before, Joel, is I think it affects the energy level of wrestlers and that can come through. I don't think anyone just, you know, was moping about,
no.
Oh, we work for a minor league company and, you know, well, this sucks. And everything I think is wrong with Tony Khan has come to fruition. Look at this crowd and this building and all the empty seats. But if Sting is standing in the ring and Darby's giving this inspirational speech and Sting's on his final tour of his career and he's playing in front of that size crowd, with where he's been and what he's done, Adam Copeland at all the big stadium shows and WrestleManias, he comes out there, takes on Minoru Suzuki, and he's 50 years old, and he's like, what am I doing? I mean, I'm not saying he for sure is doing that, but you can imagine that crosses the mind. What am I doing? I'm wrestling in front of 2,000 people getting hit with stiff shots with a Copeland. So, you know, yeah, I mean, again, I mean, I don't want to belabor the point or dwell on it, but of course it's going to affect wrestler energy and they're going to have to overcome that because it's not naturally generated. Joel.
Yeah. I mean, for me, Wade, it definitely, it seemed to me that it was much more stood out throughout the whole show and just bothered me that, yeah, I mean, it was, you know, a really, I mean, some of the people, there was moments where they popped, but yeah, I mean, you could just hear individual people talking. It just wasn't, the energy level was so low, just such a small arena where it's not a cool small arena. I mean, it was just dark where it just didn't have anything where really you're just seeing the whole thing that stood out to me between the Jeff Hardy and Swerve Strickland match was how much Matt Hardy and Prince Nana were just trying to get the crowd engaged, you know, just trying to get them to react to things because these guys are having a really decent match, but, you know, they're just trying to get some sort of engagement throughout. And then during Thunder Rosa and Red Velvet, I mean, man, there was a fire up moment from Thunder Rosa and just silence. You know, just silence from the crowd. And so, of course, yeah, that's going to have an effect on the morale there. So, you know, it's, as Wade has already mentioned, is that just having that that expansion and trying to go to these other cities where, you know, you can't just always run Chicago. You can't always run New York or places in Texas that have been very successful for them, that they're having to find all these buildings to every single week, twice a week, that they're having to book these. And it's not always going to be in the major NBA or NHL arena, that they're going to be in some of these smaller places. But certainly it does have an effect on the way that you view the show. You know, specifically, like was mentioned earlier, that there's so much momentum right now for WWE, and that's kind of been the really big overarching wrestling story, is that WWE has really distanced themselves even more as the number one. And you know, this was another example where it very much solidifies AEW as number two, and they're much further away as number two than I can remember at any point.
All right, we'll go back to Larry. Any follow-up on that or anything else?
Yeah, I was wondering if you thought it would be a good idea if AEW could look into markets or cities that the WWE doesn't usually run. Like where I'm at here in Illinois, there's three cities within 70 miles of me that have arenas that can hold at least 5,000 people. Bank of Springfield Center in Springfield, the Peoria Civic Center in Peoria, and the Grossinger Motors Arena in Bloomington. And those are places that don't usually get these kind of attractions. Do you think maybe that would help AEW in any way? And would it help if they did more localized stuff, you know, like having their wrestlers appearing on radio shows and, you know, local morning shows or the afternoon shows or things like that?
Yeah, I've heard actually the wrestlers behind the scenes.
to let people know that, hey, we're coming. You know, we're happy to be here. You know, we can't wait to put on a great show for you guys. Come on out and support us. You know, run ticket deals, things like that. Or is that something that you don't think that they have thought of or will do?
Yeah, so for sure, I've heard wrestlers grumbling behind the scenes that they aren't getting asked to do the localized publicity that they used to be asked to do. In response to dwindling crowds, and there's wrestlers who are happy to do it. Some aren't. And I don't know, you know, market for market, I haven't tracked how much that's dropped off, but anecdotally, it sounds like it has dropped off. And that would be positive, obviously, to offer up wrestlers. The Young Bucks and Kenny, you know, as like EVP's co-founders, Jericho is a guy who, you know, came in with a spirit of, hey, this is something I want to be part of building consistently over time. And I don't mean to just pick on those four, but they're, you know, the four most prominent names at the beginning. And John Moxley, too. Like, use them more. Like, get, you know, Tony Khan should go, I need you doing local radio shows. You are the stars and centerpiece of the company. Or if you've got people who might just love to do doing it, who are young and hungry to get their name out there, Max Caster and Anthony Bowens would be great, you know, probably doing radio appearances. You know, Jay White, imagine him on the radio. And people go, oh, this guy sounds, whatever. There's got to be people who are willing and able and good at it who would just jump at the chance. Miz, you know, was known for that. He's like, tell me what to do, I'll be there. You know, company guys. And I don't know that Tony's found those people who are willing to go out there and do it. There should be, you know, ideally there's some name value in some of these markets, a connection, a local connection is ideal. You know, we saw that with Ric Flair when AW came to Minneapolis. Yep. Ric Flair was doing the rounds. And so, you know, if you go to a wrestler's hometown, that's a good chance to have them do the publicity. But if not, you know, big names who people know, the Chris Jerichos, Dustin Rhodes even, have them out there doing radio and getting the word out. Of course, that would be better. And in terms of the arenas and the cities, you know, they have their methods and their reasons for going to some and places and not others. But, you know, there might be some markets that their arena team just isn't familiar with and doesn't know about. So, you know, sending them an email or tweeting to Tony and saying, hey, you know, I think we're a hungry market. And then they'll look at their, you know, localized data that they get and make a determination on whether it's worth it. And they have kind of their reasons logistically for going some places just due to, you know, the convenience of where they last were and that kind of thing that plays into it. Larry, anything else you want to say before we move on?
Yeah, on a slightly different subject, they've released the shows for the next season of Dark Side of the Ring, and I'm looking forward to see how they handle Black Saturday. As someone that was old enough to be in front of the TV watching it live, I can't tell you how weird it was to see the opening and then Freddie Miller talking. And as a fan, I'm thinking, okay, Gordon's off this week or he's not feeling well, because Freddie sometimes would do fill-in stuff, especially on like a Sunday show, and all of a sudden he's talked about the World Wrestling Federation, great new matches, great new superstars, and it didn't quite register. And then he says, here's Vince McMahon, and it slowly starts hitting me. It's like, Toto, we're not in Kansas anymore.
Yeah. Yep. That'll be fun. And I'm sure there's a generation or more of fans who don't even know what we're talking about. And that was a big moment in wrestling history and kind of a bit of a humbling wake-up call for Vince McMahon, too, that not every market's going to want New York to come in and take over their localized, customized hometown wrestling show. Cool.
Yeah, if they touch on the lead up to how that happened, how Black Saturday come to happen and everything, it'd be really great. And just wanted to say thanks for taking the call, and you guys are doing great wrestling work as always. And talking about Gordon Soley, yeah, I rip him off. So long from the land of Lincoln.
Yes. All right, thanks, Larry. Great talking with you. I still will never forget my in-person interview with Gordon Soley decades ago for a Torch Talk when I did a summer annual special with interviewing a bunch of legendary announcers. And he answered the door with a cigarette. It was like 9:30 a.m. or maybe earlier. He answered the door with a cigarette in his hand and his boxer shorts and just, oh, that's right. We're doing the interview. just, oh, that image is burned into my retina. All right. We'll go to Shinedu. I haven't heard from Shinedu in a while. Welcome. What's in your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Mr. Wade Keller, can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
Okay, I'll explain it to you. Yeah, I mean, so, you guys brought up all of my notes already were, you sipped at this point. But now, the one thing I want to talk about is that in terms of AEW, I think they have a swerve problem, right? So it's what he's definitely going to be a face, right? Like, but how do you make that work in terms of the storyline, you know? And I think, like, right now they're acting like, oh, okay, he's a bad guy, you know? But, like, that's not the way the crowd reacts, you know, which is – that's cool for a certain amount of time, but, like, you can't, you know, if you're going to push it forward. So that's what I'm saying. It's a swerve problem that they have in AEW, but I don't know what you're thinking about that, Mr. Keller.
Yeah, Joel, they've got a challenge on their hands, and that is, I mean, fans like Swerve, and he's got a catchphrase that fans like to say. We talked about earlier with the triple threat match conundrum. What course do you think they're on with him, and what course would you recommend? And do you think they've done anything wrong so far since he's moved into the top tier in the eyes of I think most viewers?
Yeah, I don't think that they've done anything wrong with him. I mean, it's just this is the continuing problem that AEW has is that they have people who are positioned as heels and do heelish things, but if the crowd likes their performances, they're going to cheer for them. And we're seeing the same thing with Samoa Joe is that people like this type of kingpin character that he's been playing. And they've been trying to find ways to get people to boo him. With Toni Storm, she's also playing a heel character, but people are very amused by her antics and facial expressions and one-liners and throwing the shoe. And so how do you find ways to get people to boo them? And with Swerve, I think that definitely that there's going to come a point here where they're just going to stop fighting any sort of boos for him and position him into being into a babyface role. So, and that could come sooner rather than later. I mean, they've talked about him putting his focus onto the championship and how that's going to be his big thing for this coming year. And also Hangman Page is saying the same thing. And definitely you could take Hangman Page as, even though he's gained a lot more momentum this year, and I think that he is as popular at this point as he ever has been throughout his run in AEW, that I don't necessarily think that a heel run could be the best thing for him. I think that certainly keep riding this momentum of finding this more serious character, but that you always go back to what he said in one of those promos is that he said something to the effect of wanting to take away that championship opportunity from Swerve at some point. And so that has left open the possibility of if they do a three-way match, does Hangman do something that gets the fans to turn on him by screwing over Swerve Strickland, and then does that result in them having a reverse roles singles feud down the road? So I think that there's some possibility there with them just eventually turning Swerve and making him into a clear babyface, but that's still going to be a little bit down the road.
All right, very good. Shinedu, anything else you want to bring up?
Oh, yeah, I saw it more on this, but because I feel like that's actually, like, the main, the primary crux of, like, I feel like that's, like, the bloodline or top-level, worth of AEW is actually Swerve Strickland and Hangman Page, for the title. So, like, I think that's very important. And I think it's a problem because they aren't positioning the people in the right way, okay, let me move on to the next one. I have Wardlow. So you like I'm a member of your website. PW Torch. Also, my boy Jason Powell as well. But so people, they think that Wardlow, wow, his haircut messed up Otis. But, I think I like what they did with him today. You know what I mean? I think I like what they did with him today. I think I liked it. So let me just ask you that. That's it. I'm not going to talk.
All right, cool.
Too much, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Sinead. Joel, Wardlow, tonight, a little bit more competitive, but they kind of set the tone. Well, it's because he's taking Trent Beretta lightly. Bunch of people at ringside for both guys. Wardlow took 9 minutes to beat Trent, hit him with a power bomb. Then he was stopped from hitting him with another power bomb after the match. What do you think of Wardlow as part of Undisputed Kingdom and his continued push in this style?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I just thought that after seeing some of these promos with Undisputed Kingdom, that I liked the stuff that I was seeing from Adam Cole, but. Just seeing him come out tonight on the crutches, even though he was kind of the centerpiece overshadowing Wardlow during the entrance. I mean, I just don't think that Undisputed Kingdom, especially Adam Cole, is at the position that you would hope for him to be. That just seems like with him coming out on the crutches, he's losing something. He's losing some of that charisma that he would have if he was at full strength. But as far as for Wardlow's character, I mean, it's just they've tried to kind of push this war dog type character, and for me, it's never connected. And I just kind of made some notes that I thought Wardlow looked pretty stiff during this match, and I'd like for him to be more explosive. Definitely the selling is not there for the big man that it is for other guys. I mean, you look at some of the other bigger wrestlers on the roster, and I just feel like that they're so much further along as far as ring ability, selling on the microphone than Wardlow, to where I made this comment when I was talking with Greg Canner on our last All Elite Conversation Club podcast, that I'm just confused as to the continued push of Wardlow. I mean, tell me if I'm missing something, Wade, that I just don't see it with this guy. That I see for a lot of other big similar wrestlers that they could be giving a lot more TV time to some other people.
Yeah, I wish Wardlow had been challenged to get beyond the stage that he was at very early on with MJF.
Yeah.
I don't think we're in a different place with him. And
agreed.
I talk about AEW not doing a good job putting wrestlers on journeys where if you miss 6, 9 months or 12 months of TV, you tune in and like, whoa. Okay. And some people get to a certain point. It's like, all right, we're in a good spot. Let's just go with it. But AEW should be creating stars and elevating stars and taking people from one place to another place. And, I think people tuning in and they see Hangman Page being like super serious, looking like he's taking things seriously. He's got confidence and kind of a chip on his shoulder and an edge. That's good. But if they tune in and they see Wardlow winning squash matches, but with different, instead of MJF, it's Adam Cole, they're like, oh, so what's gone on with Wardlow in the 2 years I haven't been watching? Oh, nothing. He hasn't had a standout match on pay-per-view where he's shown that he's grown as a wrestler. He hasn't developed stronger promos, and character development wise, he's the same guy. He just happens to be with the heel group now. It's House of Black, they're doing the same thing that they were doing. You could argue, Well, they're kind of a more polished act. They're at a certain level,
better wrestlers.
Yeah, and, they're in the six-man tags or tag matches, and, they're doing their thing anchoring that division. I think people are more accepting of that. But I think for the younger guys, people want to see, growth and improvement. And Wardlow's not there. So, is it ideal that – I think he's worth pushing, but at some point he's just got to be put in a position. It's like Miro, just spinning his wheels forever. It's like – let's get to a new spot. We've seen this. We're ready for the next thing from him. And, in a way, this is a bit of a reset because he's part of this group. But the group is off to such a cold start. I mean, Undisputed Kingdom, for so many reasons, it's not working. I mean, everything entertaining about Roderick Strong has been taken away. Taven and Bennett are trying to come across as, like, serious people. And it's, like, it's hard to do that. And then Cole had been doing this foolish comedy bits that he didn't even bother to explain. Was he really sucked in by MJF or not? Was he really a slave at the house of Roderick Strong or not? Was that all an act that people bought into, or was he really taken on a ride and then came out of it? I mean, he just, when you disrespect the audience, that you don't give them a payoff and address all those questions that certainly people logically would have, they're going to be disconnected. And Wardlow, and then starting off by going, you know, playing up the Christian Luchasaurus angle with Cole and Wardlow,
yeah,
which is so tone deaf. How did that make TV? How is that an instinct that Cole still has after all these years? I mean, are you not watching the rest of the show? You don't see how much that duplicates things. So I was bummed out about that, you know? And yeah, it's just, you wanted the angle to get off to a hot start, which is why I'm such a fan of Samoa Joe, because he knows who he is and he does it well. And it's a top level in every way. You know, I mean, he's not the best promo guy in the business, but he is authentic and believable and good. He's a solid and professional in color commentary and gets himself over and gets the match over and doesn't say dumb undercutting things. And then in the ring, he's still a credible badass. It's like, you know who he is and he does it well. So you just want more of that. All right. Mm-hmm. As I said, we'll shift to some emails here to wrap up. And we will start with Steve from Baltimore, who says, a Deadeye on the apron wasn't even sold for 1 second. Penta stood up immediately in order to take a moonsault from Hangman. Never mind the fact that Hangman had to look very dumb while Penta told the crowd to shush so that his chop could sound louder. And this match encapsulated everything that takes people out of a match. It was clear that both men are phenomenal athletes, but they lack the basic fundamental psychology of what makes wrestling work. They will not get back to 1 million viewers with this approach, let alone find the next 1 million. Yeah, I mean, it's one of my issues. There's wrestlers in AEW. I mean, Roosh does it all the time where he just gets completely sidetracked in the middle of a match. You can't take the fight seriously if he's, you know, in the middle of a move with a guy down on his back and he's posturing to the crowd or posturing to the camera. You know, Penta's doing this stuff. It's just, it doesn't play in this context. In the culture of AEW, it does seem fake, and I'm not a fan of no-selling moves. I didn't like when Hawk was no-selling Jerry Lawler's pile driver in 1986, and I don't like Penta no-selling Hangman, especially if it's just set up another move. It's dumb, and this is where, you know, leadership at the top with a vision for what wrestling should look like should be intervening. VIP members who have been listening to my Keller Hotline excerpts or reading the latest back issue we put up are reading about Vince McMahon's meeting with wrestlers 20 years ago this month. And he was meeting with wrestlers and he was saying, here's some things we're going to stop doing and here's some things we want to do better. And he's like, we're not in the Monday Night War anymore. We're not competing minute by minute with people turning the channel if we don't feed them more junk food high spots. And he's like, so we're going to slow down. We're going to tell better stories. We're going to respect the referees. And the referees are going to enforce the rules and you're not going to disregard them and you're going to make your moves count and we're going to sell high spots. We're going to sell signature moves and we're going to have a pace to things so that there's, as the phrase I use is an economy of moves that you get maximum effect from the moves that you do. It doesn't mean you can't have a flurry of moves at the right time. But don't do a Deadeye on a ring apron and then no-sell it so you can set up another spot and then play to the crowd in a way that makes absolutely no sense because if you're in a fight, you wouldn't want to give your opponent a chance to recover. So, yeah, but again, that's Tony Khan, we've learned, is not sensitive to that. And there are, you know, people who review wrestling who aren't sensitive to that. They just want more action and more spots.
Yeah.
They're out there and some are successful and prominent. I don't think it tells a good story, and I don't think people get invested. And I'm with Steve from Baltimore on this. I think you grow your audience when you do what Vince McMahon was telling wrestlers 20 years ago, and certainly what a lot of people have said. I mean, Bill Watts, Jim Cornette. I mean, there's promoters of the years who have preached this. Heck, even Ole Anderson saying, Mick Foley, slow down. You're going to end up in a wheelchair. They weren't all wrong. Terry Taylor, you know, lecturing the wrestlers in TNA about this very thing 15 years ago. You know, slow down, make every move count. Seth Rollins, by the way, being told in NXT, you don't need to always get all your spots in. It's not always part of the story of a match. You don't always have to do the dive out of the ring. And Seth really resisted that when he was in NXT. And you know what? Maybe he's a little more beat up because he didn't listen to the people telling him that. So this isn't a new thing. And it's seen by the young guys as the old guys wanting to slow down the young guys who can still go. But sometimes it takes a leader to say, you know what, let's rethink this. And let's make sure that if we're doing things, and it's not just about wear and tear on the bodies. That's not the only reason not to do it. Sometimes it's just numbing fans to moves that should have higher impact. Joel, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm in agreement with that, and that's the thing that I hear a lot with some of the coverage of these shows, specifically from non-PW Torch sources, is that they were entertained by the segment, that there was a lot of good action in there, but you hear me talking about with the rankings, and that I just want everything to mean something, to have the moves mean something, for each of these things to have a purpose with it. And so when you have these matches where people are just doing moves and then they're not selling it, I mean, it just takes away the investment from it. And it's become so patterned that is a lot of the ways that, people are having matches, specifically in AEW, that it is just kind of, you do this one spot and then it's on to the next thing. And we only have so much time and we're just trying to get all our stuff in there. And my other issue with this match too, is that's like, man, Penta is a really good wrestler, that he has great action. He's very crisp in the ring. But at the same time, it's like you just know that every time Penta's in a singles match like this, like there's no drama to it because of course he's going to lose. Of course he's not going to win against Hangman Page. And so we just get into the same kind of pattern booking that just takes away from that investment. Whereas I think that if you did a better job to slow things down, make each of these moves matter more, do some selling and just take away, don't always have these big boom, 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 spot, spot, spot. Maybe you could save on people having some injuries, that they're not having to immediately take one big move and then just get into the next thing, that there is some time to recover, get your footing again on things, that I think it could have multiple benefits outside of just telling a better story.
All right. Very good. We'll go to next. John in Tennessee. It's time for AEW to start running smaller arenas. There's just zero energy in these big arenas with barely 2,000 people in them. It sounds like some of the Smoky Mountain wrestling shows I went to as a kid in large high school gyms. You could hear fan conversations tonight. Changes have to be made. This is not a huge venue they were in tonight, capacity-wise, but it wasn't even close to full either. I really think one of AEW's biggest mistakes was not making Bryan Danielson one of the top two or three stars on a consistent basis. He came in after working main events against Roman Reigns, and he's been out of the main event scene during his time in AEW. Do you guys think making Danielson the centerpiece act before he retires would help boost AEW attendance and ratings? Thanks for all the great content. Everyone go VIP. Thank you, John. They have not gotten what they could have out of Bryan Danielson. And I think Danielson is a hero. He's worshipped. He's praised. But Bryan Danielson doesn't always know what's best for the company he's working for. And Bryan Danielson has been, I think, selfishly self-indulgent in what he has contributed to AEW. He's not believable when he's being a jerk. Fans know better. He's trying to have dream matches as opposed to be part of storylines and matches with a character that's going to help draw ratings and draw views and get people to tune in every week outside of the group who just want to see novel matchups with Bryan Danielson, which is, there's worse things in pro wrestling. Don't get me wrong. But this gets down to the leadership of Tony Khan going, Bryan, love you, but we brought you in not so you can have the matches that you want to have with the people you want to have them with as part of your bucket list. You're here to help us make money, our audience. Look at attendance. Look at our viewership numbers. We can do better, and you can be part of that. And here's what I want you to do. And I just don't think Tony Khan's doing that. I think it's an age thing. He's a super fan who looks at these who looks up to these wrestlers instead of them looking at him with an aura of of respect, not fear and intimidation in the way that Vince did it, but this aura of, yeah, this guy's accomplished something, and I'm going to let him guide me. And Tony might have to grow into that and survive for a while, but I'm with John. I think Danielson has contributed great things to the company, but it's great things for the number of eyeballs who are watching, but not in a way consistently where you go, all right, his goal is about expanding the audience and maybe leaving his comfort zone a little bit. And that's part of the issue. So many people in AEW are just wrestling people in their comfort zone. Again, because Tony Khan can't get – certain wrestlers don't want to do jobs, so they never wrestle singles matches. Certain wrestlers rarely wrestle because they don't want to wrestle very often. I mean, he just doesn't have the respect of the locker room or the leadership or the command to get out of some of these people who I think are taking advantage of him in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked for many different leaders, and people have different styles of how they run their companies and how they lead teams and give their direction and convey their vision of what they're looking for. And certainly, Tony has consistently given off the aura, whether it's him when he goes in front of the crowd and speaks in front of everybody, or these post-media, the post-show press conferences that he does with the wrestling media, that he is consistently the wrestling fan who is fantasy booking a lot of these matchups of things that I think he's interested in seeing, matchups that the wrestlers are interested in having. But I think he needs to recalibrate things and convey the vision to everybody of how do we grow our business. And I think growing your business is looking at the past and what things that have worked previously for other promotions, what has worked for him to grow the promotion. And, just kind of reeling more things in that you're not, as a leader, you're not going to be able to make everybody happy. And so we just talked about earlier about having wrestlers making media appearances and doing other things that maybe they don't want to. And it's like, when you think of so what does it take to be a WWE wrestler? It's like they work this, everybody talks about the schedule and all the house shows and different appearances and all those things. And it just seems to me with AEW, it's like, there's maybe some of that is happening, but certainly I'm not seeing that on Twitter. I'm not seeing all these appearances and other things going on. That as a leader, you should be able to say you are going to be a part of this. Here's the reason why. You tell them the why of why you're going to help grow our business. But I need you to make this media appearance. I need you to take this loss. I need you to do this in your match. And you're explaining with everything relating back to that vision and how it unites everything together. And it just feels like for so long, I mean, just for the whole existence of the company, it's really just kind of been like, how can we put on the biggest match for the biggest show right now without really consideration as to what you're building or what you can save for other things or, just having that overall vision of growth to get to that next level in the company that we were always talking about. How do you get the next million? How do you grow your viewership? And it just seems that, of course, this is the easy thing that people have poked at them, but it's been more about how do we get a higher rating on cagematch.net? How do we get that, a higher star rating or a higher rating that way? And I know there's a lot of business metrics that they're looking at, but it just seems like it needs to be reeled in to where people are understanding the vision, and he's got to find wrestlers who really want to be a part of that and find a way for people to respect him and just be more commanding to wrestlers that, hey, you're going to take this loss, or, hey, I need you here to make this appearance, or, being the authority figure that this company desperately needs. It desperately needs a leader who has the vision of how to grow the company. Also talking about Danielson being that centerpiece act, the difficult thing with Danielson is that he is constantly injured. I mean, he's perpetually injured after having these big matches, that he's somebody that you can't really rely upon to be the number one star or the number one champion. I certainly hope at some point that we do see what a world championship reign looks like for Danielson, just to see the way that what direction he takes it in. I think that it could do a lot to add prestige to the championship with the level of matches that he'd be having, the diversity of opponents that he'd be going against. But you're always running that risk that after one of those matches, he could have another major injury because at his age and the style that he wrestles, he's more susceptible to having that happen. So, I think that there's a lot of business that could be done with that, but you also run the risk of him, not being available.
All right. Up next, JB from Detroit. I love the Bucks' new entitled smarmy attitude. It's the first real characters they've had, seemingly, in a while, and it feels natural to them. It doesn't feel put on. I think that by the time we get to their match with Sting and Darby at Revolution, the fans will be clamoring for them to get their comeuppance, and the heel baby face dynamic will be very clear. And that is what I'm holding off hope for. I'm commenting, but I'm reserving final judgment. Does that make sense? I have some trepidation. I am for them trying. I have been pushing for them to do something different and get more involved as characters in the, athletic soap opera that is pro wrestling, and not just sit back and rest on their laurels and do, insider clubhouse references and then have great tag team matches five times a year, give or take. I want more from them. So if it's not a home run or a grand slam out of the gate, so be it. They can adjust, and maybe what what I was hoping for. They do something different, but it's still better than nothing. And let's see how it plays out through the match, the presumed match with Sting and Darby. To me, it feels put on, but not everything in wrestling that feels put on is necessarily, you know, without some value. Joel, anything you want to add on that?
Yeah, I mean, that what I was talking about before is them feeling genuine in these types of characters, and I, while I am entertained by what they're doing right now, because they're falling back on the roots of doing a lot more of kind of the being the elite, but in a different, it's still the same tone that they're striking as the being the elite stuff, but slightly different characters with taking advantage of their EVP titles. But it doesn't, you know, they Matt and Nick Jackson have always come off to me as, you know, good Christian boys from California who enjoy doing, you know, enjoy having their matches and enjoyed being on the road and building up their grassroots business. And, you know, so then when they play this type of character, it doesn't ring true to who I view them as real people. But you know, you can still play a character that's not totally in line with who you are as a person. But I just need to see more of this to be convinced that this is something that is sustainable for them. Because we've seen them try a ton of different iterations of the Young Bucks, and nothing has really been a big thing that has worked for them outside of just them having great matches. So I hope that this is able, as time goes on, that this gives them more depth as characters and eventually leads them to being more just kind of regular on-screen talent, whereas they've just kind of been more of the special attraction where they're kind of more in the background and then they pop up for the pay-per-views to have a five-star match there, but then they kind of go away for a little bit. That I think just finding the correct lane for them of something that resonates with the crowd reactions that they're looking for, where they can be more regularly a part of the show because they bring a lot of star power that they could certainly use.
All right, number two. How many different periods of Wardlow squash matches have you seen through the history of AEW? I don't know. I mean, probably like four or five, Joel?
Of different kinds of squash
matches?
Yeah,
just a little different. Like there was the I'm Wardlow, the bodyguard of MJF. I'm the guy who squashed MJF. I'm the guy who's now babyface and I'm just squashing people. And now I'm a bad guy in a faction who may or may not be the leader. He's not the leader, but I may or may not be the most physical imposing centerpiece act. I might just be here to serve at the needs of Adam Cole.
Well, they're all just slight variations. I mean, I already buried the guy earlier in the show that I just don't see it with Wardlow. I think that it's a very limiting of what he's able to do in the ring. And we've seen him for a few years now that I would have hoped to have seen more advancement because he has been given quite a push and he's done more than just the squash matches that he's been giving. Been given some good opponents. Yes, he was dealt a bad hand with everything that happened with MJF around the Double or Nothing, but I just view with so much other talent. I mean, we talk about the glut of talent on the AEW roster that, you know, if you want to push a big wrestler like that, then, you know, give that time to Powerhouse Hobbs or somebody like that.
Yeah. All right, number three, the fire that Darby Allin has for Sting and Sting's return to wrestling really showed in his promo today. I really bought into the idea that it means a lot to Darby to help Sting win the tag titles from Ricky Starks and Big Bill and then beat the Bucks at Revolution to retire Sting as an AEW Tag Team Champion. Darby truly has become a good to great promo in AEW, and he's even doing excellent in-ring promos now. Darby has grown a lot, Joel. I mean, he didn't want to talk. He wasn't confident talking. I think of Taz as another wrestler who was like that. Christian and Edge barely talked early on in their tag team run because Vince didn't really let tag teams talk. They were just there to have TLC matches and such. There's other examples over the years where people, you know, the idea was, oh, you're not a good talker, so you're not going to talk. And then they started talking and they got good. It's one of my arguments for the Young Bucks doing more work and Kenny Omega doing more work. If they don't think they know what their character is or their voice or their character, or they don't think that it's top level and they, you know, their pride is on the line. They don't want to not be the best at something. So they're only going to do the thing that they're good at and not get better at other things. That sucks. Sting has been a below par promo the vast majority of his career. Early on, if you watch his early promos, he'd lose his train of thought in the middle of the promos. And then that's where the yell came from. The yell wasn't devised as a gimmick. It was a thing he did when he lost his train of thought. And then it became his thing. When he channels the Joker, which I think is just kind of corny. He is better, but it's also corny. But, like, he actually seems to kind of keep a train of thought. And I was bummed out tonight. That said, on the other flip side, Darby has gotten better. He comes across as a leader. He is absolutely the voice of that relationship. And it's weird, you know, because he's supposed to be the protege. And Sting almost feels like Darby's protege, where Darby's breathed some life into Sting and mm-hmm. got him to come back from, you know, a sort of nonchalance or a resignation that his career was over. And I'd like to see that played up a little more. Darby's really good at putting Sting over. I want to hear Sting put over Darby in return. I mean, it felt kind of selfish of Sting not to give Darby some praise in return after Darby put Sting over in that way from a character standpoint. You know, I just think if this were real, you would definitely want Sting to say more, because Darby really raised the bar in this promo for the storyline.
Yeah, I mean, Darby has really developed into a very well-rounded babyface character where he's much more than just the daredevil who takes the crazy bumps. I mean, he is a very sympathetic, you know, babyface where he can cut a great promo to get you interested and beyond, beyond just what you see on the surface level, that he's created a lot more depth to who he is as a character. You can hear his real true passion and heartfelt feelings towards Sting. And I think that to your point, yeah, we'd like to hear a lot more from Sting to put over Darby Allin as well. But I mean, credit to Darby Allin that he has gotten himself over. You know, he's had that association with Sting for a long time, but certainly you're seeing that Darby has graduated to a point to where he can succeed definitely on his own, you know, and it'll be interesting to see what things look like for him when he's back as just a solo act and not with Sting. Because I think that Darby, I mean, so long as his body holds up and he's able to, and he's not hurting all the time. I mean, I don't know. I imagine from the bumps that this guy takes that he must be just in a tremendous amount of pain. He even made the joke tonight that he said people, when he goes on radio shows, that people say that he may be retiring before Sting, that they may not yes. even get to that match, which I thought yep. was a great line. That was just endearing to him as a person and as the character. So, yeah, I'd like to hear a lot more from Sting. I'm assuming that with 5 more weeks until Revolution that we're going to hear more from Sting, that there's going to be a little bit more variety than what we got tonight. But certainly this was an opportunity for Sting to reciprocate the heartfelt feelings.
Number 4 from JB, is there any chance that one or both of the chosen opponents in next week's Dealer's Choice matches are either a debut or a returning surprise? If so, any guesses as to who Swerve and Hangman's opponents might be? I have not put any thought into that at this point. We've been rolling, covering the show live and then talking about it. But anything come to mind, Joel?
I mean, certainly, yeah, you could have a returning wrestler. I can't think of anybody off the top of my head right now. But you would think that they're going to give them, you know, big, difficult opponents.
Right.
You know, but I mean, there's no one immediately. I'm just kind of scrolling through the roster page right now. You know, and there's nothing that immediately comes to mind. But
someone should pick Miro, but they won't. Because Miro doesn't do
right,
jobs
yeah.
and doesn't wrestle, doesn't appear in person very often. And, you know, the mysterious existence of Miro on this roster is still a story that will be told someday. But they
maybe,
should pick
Pac,
him.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, he'd be good. Powerhouse Hobbs, Takeshita. You know, you want to pick somebody who isn't immersed in a storyline, but also can do a job, but makes sense that someone would pick them as their opponent. Minoru Suzuki would have been a good pick if they had him next
yeah.
week, you know, just have Hangman send him after Swerve or vice versa. But I hope they do a good job with it, because obviously they should. I mean, you'd think the wrestler who gets picked should have some agency in whether they do it or not. But I don't know if they're going to tell that part of the story.
Dealer's choice.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
All right, 5. Will every division part of the returning ranking system? If so, will the tag and trails divisions have enough teams to fill both rankings? Yeah, what do you think of their follow-up to Saturday's announcement, Joel, about bringing the rankings back and saying they're going to reveal them at the end of the month, but not telling us much? I love Excalibur going, wins and losses are going to mean everything going forward. Not that they haven't been important, but they're going to mean more. It's like, can we flesh this out a little better than that, please?
Yeah.
What does it mean that they're going to mean more? You have to have an answer to this. You can't just say you're going to have a ranking system and not, on the first chance you have to provide evidence you've put thought into it, provide no evidence that you put thought into how to execute this. records have been talked about since the ranking systems went away. Now they're going to be talked about again, where they were records, wins and losses not counted. I mean, when Hook got a title shot against Joe, it's because of his 27-28-2 record, or 30-2 record by the time the match happened, I think. They talked about it. So what's different? And yes, how does it affect the all four singles men's titles? I can't believe I'm saying that. But, you know, how do the rankings work? Does someone in the top five get their choice of any title shot? If you're in the top five, do you only get a world title shot because the other belts are meant for people in position 6 through 15?
Right.
Like, think it through. Come up with something. I don't have confidence it's going to happen. I'm not optimistic, but I'm not ruling out we're not going to be pleasantly surprised in a week.
Yeah, I mean, are they going to have different ranking? I mean, like, they don't – it's not like UFC where they have different weight classes. I mean, they just have different championships. And, you know, there's not much really of anything that distinguishes these championships between one another other than who those people are currently feuding with or associating with. So is there going to be rankings of, you know, for the AEW World title, International title, TNT title, Continental championship? I mean, you know, I think there's just so many questions to this. And you could serve the audience by creating or just explaining what to look forward to in this ranking system. I mean, I just am a firm believer that you're a promoter, you're promoting wrestling, that you should be explaining these things so that people have something to look forward to instead of just guessing what this could be. You know, you have Rampage and you have Collision to explain some more of this. Otherwise, they said by the end of the month, so that would be by next week's Dynamite, that we're going to see some new ranking system. And either at that point or beforehand, I would like to see a little bit more explanation. You know, are we going to see something for the World Trios Championship? I mean, you know, what's going to be the difference between the women's world title and the TBS title? Or is it all just one big list? And then who do you decide gets a shot at the championship? I mean, if it's all just one for men's single, how do you differentiate if someone's ranked number one? Which championship do they go after? Is it going to be the world title? And then you say, okay, well, then the fourth ranked person is going to go after the Continental Championship, you know? So I would assume that there's going to be a variety of different ranking system, but you know, I just don't know at this point. And I think that there's a possibility that this goes into the wrong direction, and I hope that Tony is taking some feedback, but has also really thought this out and thought about what didn't work last time with the ranking system and how they can make it better. I think by having an expanded pool, but certainly you're going to need to do a lot more explaining of things, specifically with the differentiation of these championships, because right now, you know, Samoa Joe is treated as the bigger of the other ones, but you mentioned that there's four men's single titles. There's really nothing all that different from the international title to the TNT to the Continental Championship.
Well put. All right, and finally, JB says, will the recent returns of Serena Deeb, Thunder Rosa, and the recent additions of Mariah May and Deonna Purrazzo and potentially Mercedes Moné, could 2024 be the year that we see AEW's women's division become a strength rather than a weakness in the company? It seems as though Tony Khan is truly making an investment in the division and is excited about it with a good reaction to Tony Storm's most recent character. As always, love the show, and everybody go VIP. Thank you, JB. Yeah, I mean, they're building a strong division. I mean, obviously, you know, arrival of Mercedes Moné, Sasha Banks would give a centerpiece star power and a Toni Storm Mercedes feud. If they're going to bring in the former Sasha Banks as a babyface and they're keeping Toni Storm a heel in order to feature that match at a big pay-per-view, that'd be the biggest women's match they could have. Toni's excited about Toni Storm. She's, you know, wonderful in her role. Whether you agree that it should be part of AEW and that type of gimmick, you know, there's a lot to like about the character. It's very defined, and I think, you know, consistently entertaining. You know, you're like, what's she going to say this week, and how is she going to play up her character, and what old movie line is she going to reference that I'm going to want to Google later and go, wow, okay. She's pulling from old stuff that she's actually, you know, these old movies she's watching. So that's fun. Thunder Rosa, I don't think she's off to a great start on her comeback. I mean, I think they've just assumed she's going to pick up where she leaves off, and there's not a lot of character development. But they're treating it as a big deal, which is good, but we need to find out more about her all over again. Mariah May has been fun, and I think there's, you know, potential, obviously, for that to grow into something more. Deonna Purrazzo's been good. I don't know who body-shamed her, but that just sort of felt like something Was there something on TV, or is that something that was brought onto TV from social media that just shouldn't be talked about on TV?
I mean, last week, Tony Storm said something about a fake tanned hag or something like that. I mean, I don't know.
I'm not sure if that's body shame. It came across to me like there was somebody who was cruel and mean to her on social media, and then they empowered the jerk troll by amplifying the message. It's just like, no, you just ignore that stuff. You don't reply to it. Don't feed the trolls. So I just don't know the context, but I was like, why?
Yeah.
I don't think you should go. I just don't think you should go there. I mean, you know, yes, Logan Paul does it to Kevin Owens, but you know, there's a different history for men and women in this world, in sports and pro wrestling. And it takes me out of the moment of enjoying things. So I would just not get into body shaming somebody who doesn't fit, you know, Kevin Dunn and Vince McMahon's idea of what a beautiful woman is. Even a character like Toni Storm, who's trying to be heel and getting heel heat and all that. And she's been a victim of that too. I mean, she was in WWE. So yeah, I don't know. That's a sidebar. But his question is, you know, do they have a good solid division? Yeah. I mean, if Chris Statlander gets a manager and we don't have to hear her cut promos anymore and she gets her character straightened out. I mean, I think if they get Willow Nightingale, kind of really get behind her and not have a feeling of start and stop with her. There's women who are doing jobs and aren't being featured who show talent too. So I don't know it's just a larger issue with Tony's booking, but especially with the women, it's obviously not his passion. But he does seem maybe a little more excited about it than he has in the past, in great part because he loves the Toni Storm character. Joel, what's your assessment?
Yeah, I think that he's definitely, trying to add a lot more talent and depth into the women's division. But he just has so many people on the roster that even though he's getting more talented in-ring workers, and we've seen that with Deonna Purrazzo, who I think has really shined, you know, outside of the times where I think that, Toni Storm, I feel like last week overshadowed Deonna a little bit with just her character work. I thought that this week was different with them doing the stage interview, that I thought it gave a lot more depth to that storyline, and how they have that connection to where they show that tattoos. I thought this was a really good segment this week, but it's just going to be a matter of how much does Tony want to invest and give TV time to the women's division, where he's already fighting so much, for the other people on the roster. That, I mean, literally he just has too many people at this point to where, how can you get invested in some of the women's characters when it's just, you know, if there's only like one or two segments per show for them. And so who do you want to feature, you know, and unless you're doing multi-person matches all the time, that it's difficult to feature those people. And I would assume that if Mercedes is brought on, that she would be, you know, the most heavily featured person, because she'd probably be the highest paid of all the women on the roster. But it's just really going to be a matter of, does Tony find a way to prioritize getting over all these characters, instead of just packing the roster with really good workers.
All right. Let's go to our final email to wrap up the email portion here. Zach in Texas says, gentlemen, seeing Adam Copeland fight Minoru Suzuki was not on my 2024 bingo card. Hell, it wasn't even my... It wasn't my ever bingo card. It wasn't ever on my bingo card, I think it means. It was wild seeing these two slug it out. I'm thoroughly excited for Sting and Darby Allin challenging for the tag titles in 2 weeks. I can't wait to see Sting raise a belt over his head one more time. The Bucks were once again overbearing and obnoxious. Them throwing their EVP weight around is a great way to build heat. Whoever eventually beats them and strips some of those titles will be heroes. I thought Toni Storm and Deonna Purrazzo had a very strong segment. Deonna bringing up the matching tattoos was a nice touch and a way to ground Toni in reality. My biggest problem with the show was that crowd. It was by far the worst crowd AEW's had since they went to that Tampa suburb in 2022. The crowd was truly sad. AEW needs to never go back to Savannah again. Well, go back when the product's harder and they can fill a building. So he threw a lot at us. We covered most of that. Anything you want to comment on in addition to what we said before about those topics?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think we covered that. Joel, anything else from this show we didn't bring up through the opening segment, the callers and the emailers that you want to comment on? How about Ty Valkyrie and Johnny TV?
Yeah, I was not expecting to see them on TV at all, but they're there playing their characters and set up a match for next week. So I am never opposed to when they set up matches for next week.
And I like those two together. They've got a real life chemistry, so play it up. I think, you know, Ty Valkyrie should be on that list of the women that, you know, should make people a lot more optimistic about the AEW Women's Division. Johnny's still weird. I don't know. I can't remember what he said, but it's like, what? He's just on another planet. Speaking of another planet, Jeff Hardy against Swerve Strickland. I mean, I thought, like, Jeff, when Swerve went over to Jeff early in the match and tried to, like, apply an armbar, and Jeff just, like, turtled up or something. I don't know what was going on there, but it just felt like, did the backbreaker knock him out, or is Jeff confused, or what? It was just awkward. And, you know, just when I watch Jeff Hardy wrestle, it's like, oh, man, is he going to even land – is he going to land the Swanton? Like, I've been worried about that forever, but I'm more worried about it now, that he's just not going to tuck in time and hurt himself. And I don't want to watch Jeff Hardy matches like that, but, I mean, he just, like, got up and left once, you know, just walked through the crowd and left a building. I just – you never know what you're going to get, but it's –
yeah.
I'm not entertained by the unpredictability and sort of clunkiness and unevenness of his performances these days.
Yeah, I mean, I had a note here that at times it seemed like they just weren't on the same page about certain things. And just a lot of times when you watch Jeff Hardy, I mean, yeah, he's still able to do some of the flips, but it's like, it's just, it, you know, you watch some wrestlers and they're controlled in the way that they're doing things. And with him, it's just, it's a body coming out of the air and it's coming at you.
Yeah.
And you don't know how it's going to hit you, and hopefully you don't get injured by it. And, you know, Jeff's still trying to do his style, and I thought that this match was, you know, it was definitely passable, that there was you know, some awkward spots in this, and I thought this was probably the Jeff's better performance than we've seen in a while, you know, considering some of the tag matches have not gone over great as of recently. And if they're still on the track for this Jeff Hardy a heel turn at some point, which has been rumored, Jeff, I mean, was definitely one of the most cheered people on this show. I mean, people are really into Jeff Hardy. So
wrestlers trying to get on TV by pitching angles that involve turns should be suspended for 2 months. Like, there's too many turns in AEW. And, it, again, this comes down to leadership. When all the wrestlers are trying to figure out what can we pitch to Tony so we can get TV time, and then if we don't get the right kind of TV time, we're going to complain on social media, but we'll say it's an angle. No, just stop it. Like, I mean, I don't know.
Stop it.
Yeah. I mean, Tony and his crew need to have, yeah, just – know who they're going to push. And, you know, yes, it's fine for us to come up with ideas for themselves, but you have to step back and go in the big picture. Do we really want to spend a turn on, you know, some mid-card Rampage match, no matter what the stature of the wrestler is historically? Or is there a better way to kind of save that stuff? But it just isn't part of the DNA of how TNA, of TNA, how AEW operates, unfortunately. One other thing for you, and then if you've got anything else you can, and then we'll sign off. The Acclaimed Billy Gunn and Bullet Club Gold. We saw Bullet Club Gold come out in support of the Acclaimed Billy Gunn, with Jay White pulling a chair away from who was going to use it? Was it Nana? No, it was
Was it Bishop Khan?
Yeah, it was one of them. Kind of slid the chair into the ring, and then one of them used it. So, yeah, what do you think of this faction, this group, and what we saw with them this week after agreeing to team together last week?
Yeah, I mean, speaking of turns, I can't wait for the Bullet Club Gold to turn on the Acclaim. I mean, I just don't think that you know, these two being together, this is not the role that I imagined Jay White being at, or the Guns. I thought that they did a really nice job establishing themselves as a heel group. And now that they're at least playing up the babyface role, being with the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn, that, you know, I just want to see them turn on them and just be heels. I'm really not interested in seeing them doing any of the scissoring or being associated with them. I thought that there was a time for the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn, and it's just does not hit the same way that I feel. It's gotten a little tired, and you know, I'm just tired of seeing the scissoring stuff.
And Max Caster just seems like he's kind of phoning in his raps. I mean, they used to have Current Events. It was Cutting Edge, and I never thought
they were that good.
Well, fair enough. But yeah, he was pulling from Current Events, you know, and you're like, oh, I can't believe he said that. And now it's sort of like, yeah, three quick jokes and we're on. And no, I know there's, you know, it's, you know, a little divisive in terms of how good he was. But, you know, Prince Nana was a Nigerian prince. Stop sending emails to my mama. I mean, that was fine. I mean, that's, you know, it's sort of derivative with Nana, but it's also good to establish that is kind of his gimmick, the origin story of what his
Based on.
But then, you know, a couple of generic insults at his opponents, and that's it. I don't know. He just seems to have lost his desire to go out there. So I don't know if he was tired of being edited or told you can't do current events anymore. It's upsetting. You know, it's too political. I don't know. But he does seem like he's in a different zone and a different phase of effort.
Hmm.
But maybe he's still just heartbroken over MJF not wanting to be his platonic boyfriend. I still don't know what that was, and we'll never know.
I guess I hope we don't know, because I don't want to see MJF associated with them again.
I know. Well, I mean, maybe Caster's done an interview somewhere where he explained the whole thing and the idea, and someday he'll explain what they were going for and be introspective and reflective on whether it was a bad idea or not. But yeah, boy, they just pivoted away from that. And now, it's hard to look at him the same way. You know, it really is, when he just gave himself up and, you know, whatever was cool about him to play this weird gay, not gay stalker role for MJF. I mean, I still just do not understand what that was all about. Anyway, Joel, anything else?
No, I do look forward to it. I mean, at some point, I mean, there was like that time where you got all these shoot interviews and that stuff from people. And I don't think we need to go back to those shoot videos and stuff. But certainly to hear more about what was going on with some of the booking and storylines and stuff at some point down the road from these AEW wrestlers is something I look forward to 20 plus years down the road to hearing us about some stories.
Yes, I know.
And people asking about, hey, what happened with this thing? And, you know, just trying to, you know, when they're not trying to, or when they're not working with AEW or wherever they're at that point, to explain some of these things or what was happening at the time.
Yep. All right. Very good. Joel, thanks. Always a pleasure talking AEW with you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Wade. This is great.
Yep. Thanks, listener. Sorry we didn't get to all the calls, but we have run so long. So just give us a call on Saturday night or next Wednesday, or drop an email our way for the flagship.